Welcome to Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Central Catskill region. There are now 10 states and the District of Columbia that have what is called medical aid in dying laws that permit people who want to end their lives because of unrelieved pain or suffering, enables them to get the help they need to die a comfortable, dignified death. New York State continues to have a bill for medical aid in dying that has been unable to pass the legislature. And I've talked about this before, but it's very timely right now again, and here to talk about why this is so important are two longtime advocates for medical aid in dying. David Levin is the executive director emeritus and senior consultant for End of Life Choices New York. David, thank you much, very much for coming back on to Health Cetera in the Catskills.
I'm happy to be with you, Diana.
And we also have Barbara Backer, who is a retired nurse living in Rochester, and for transparency purposes, she is a friend and colleague for many years. Barbara, welcome to Health Cetera in the Catskills.
Thanks so much, Diana.
So I'm having some trouble hearing you, Barbara.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, if you're on speakerphone, take it off speakerphone.
Not on speakerphone.
Okay. Keep it close to your mouth.
Is it better now?
It's a little bit better. Yeah, let's keep that volume up. Okay.
Okay. Can you hear me now better?
Yes, I can hear you better. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Yeah,
oh, that's real good. That's very
good.
Okay.
Good. Okay.
So let's start by talking about what is medical aid in dying. And David, maybe you can start us off.
Well, medical aid in dying is the process by which an adult a patient who is 18 years of age or older and who has a medically confirmed terminal illness that is incurable and irreversible and will likely cause death within 6 months, as well as being decisionally capable and making informed healthcare decisions, are eligible to receive a prescription of medication from a physician which they can take at a time and place of their choosing if they decide to do so, to end their suffering.
And so some people refer to it as suicide. What would you say?
Well, it's really quite a bit different than suicide. If you think about the typical suicide, unfortunately, people who die by suicide could continue to live, but they choose not to. They often die impulsively, violently, and certainly in isolation, almost always. And for the most part, their deaths are really quite tragic. To the contrary, medical aid in dying is really only for those whose disease is, in fact, killing them. And they will soon die. The process usually takes at least several weeks after the request for the prescription is made. And it always occurs after consultation with two physicians, both of whom have to make the decisions that I mentioned earlier about the person being terminally ill and having decision-making capacity. There's almost always family support as well. So that this process is really, generally speaking, very empowering. So as a consequence, the term assisted suicide has been rejected by numerous organizations, including the American Public Health Association, the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine, the American Medical Women's Association, the American Psychological Association, and the American Academy of Family Physicians, among others, as well as in all the state laws which authorize medical aid in dying.
That's very helpful. Barbara Backer, you have been a long-time supporter of medical aid in dying. Tell us about why.
Yeah, well, David, excellent summary of this. I'd just like to back up a little in terms of some broad strokes of what end of life means. End of life care, death and dying, are very difficult subjects for people in the North American culture to discuss. They're generally avoided by many people, families. It's very, very difficult. So just starting out with thinking about medical aid and dying, if people haven't thought much about dying at all, that's starting to be a very hard process to begin. I think what we have to remember is that our culture is increasingly diverse, and when I say diversity, I don't mean just race and ethnicity. Diversity can include gender, age, where you live, your employment, your education. All of those things go into people's decision-making about end-of-life issues. I see end-of-life as the medical aid in dying as a continuum on the end-of-life options that people now have legally, which probably people are more familiar with, palliative care, hospice, voluntary stopping eating and drinking. Those are all part of end-of-life options that people have. So I see medical aid in dying as just another, not just, but another option in this continuum of choices that people have. And we'll probably talk more about it, but one of the main things about this legislation is that it is not mandatory. And what I've encountered in my advocacy for this and also work with patients and families, friends, it's not mandated. You don't have to take this. You don't have to do this. It's an option. It's a choice. And I think that's a very important thing to emphasize, that no one's going to force you into this. There are many safeguards attached to the bill. And so we want to be careful about recognizing that and emphasizing that point when we talk with people about it.
So, Barbara, let me just follow up, though. You talk about a range of choices. Why would you need to turn to medical aid in dying if you've got these other choices of palliative care, hospice care, stopping nutrition and hydration?
Yeah, great question. Quite often people don't have to turn to this if it becomes a law. Sometimes palliative care, very often palliative care, combined with hospice care, are enough for many people. But there are instances in which it is not enough, and people have endless pain and suffering, and it's not possible for them to continue to live, but it's not quite ready for the continuum for death, so that all the other options are possible and often work. This is just another option, and as David pointed out, it's for people who are terminally ill. Now, that's different than palliative care. Palliative care, anybody can have at any time, at any age. It doesn't mean that you're dying. It's a very helpful, important thing to have for children if they're in great pain, accident, trauma, cancer. This helps. It helps with older people.
It's really symptom management. Palliative care.
Pardon?
Symptom management is what palliative care is about.
It's absolutely management palliative care. And in junction with the current care that the person is getting, it's a team thing. Yeah. And we saw this a lot with the COVID epidemic, mm-hmm. in which people were coming into the emergency room ever with COVID and in great distress. And many people in healthcare are great practitioners, but don't always know how to work with that intensive kind of pain or respiratory difficulty. So the palliative care people were very, very active and busy during COVID. That was very important to have that.
Yes, Dave.
If I may add a point to what you're saying, Barbara, about people accelerating their deaths by voluntarily stopping eating and drinking, which is a clearly legal option. All over this country, And people have also had the right now, at least since 1990, to never start or to stop life-sustaining treatments, which is also going to accelerate their deaths. And there's no, seems to be no objection to those things really at all. So there's really no good reason, in my view, as to why people might be objecting to medical aid in dying, which, again, as you mentioned, Barbara, is just another option for people to use if and when their suffering might become unbearable, because as good as hospice generally is, it's not sufficient to relieve the suffering of all the dying.
So, given that, then, why is it so controversial? Why are people still not on board with this? The legislature in New York, we consider this a progressive state, and it can't get through the state. It's been in here for how many years? Seven, 8 years or more?
Nine.
We're in the ninth year, and there's no question, but every year there are more and more sponsors of the bill. In fact, there are now 85 sponsors in total in the Assembly and the Senate, which is a lot for a bill. Mm-hmm. So while it is somewhat controversial and there is some opposition to it, and unfortunately, even though the vast majority of citizens across the state, regardless of demographics, whether it's age or religion or political affiliation, support medical aid in dying, when it comes to the legislature itself, it's really very unfortunate that the vast majority, in fact, all the sponsors of the current bill are Democrats. And while there have been some Republican sponsors of the bill in the past, there currently aren't any. And it's really not, I think it's inexcusable, and it really doesn't make any sense to me, given the fact that the constituents in almost all jurisdictions, Republicans, Democrats, are supportive of the Medical Aid in Dying Act.
And let me just say that I did contact this morning, unfortunately not until this morning, both Assemblyman Tagg's office and Senator Oberacker's office. They are the representatives in the New York State Legislature for our region. And I asked them what their position was. I've not yet gotten a response, but if I do, I will share that with listeners in the future. So tell us about what's, for those people who continue to oppose it, why do they oppose it?
You know, I wish I had the answer. Maybe, David, you can help out with that. I just think it is such a core part of people's beliefs and values, whether it be religion or a lack of trust or being afraid that it will be abused somehow. I've heard that from people, that there's people worry about if this is a law, it will be abused for the most towards the most vulnerable and frail people, that they'll be coerced into taking this medication, which is not so, which has not proven to be statistically through the states that have had it. I think Oregon for 25 years, is that right, David? I think it's that long that they have not had any problems with abuse. And actually that was brought, that issue was brought to court in California recently, and the judge dismissed the case. It was without merit. The plaintiffs had no real case to say that that was being abused, that law. So I think that can be part of the issues. I think there's sometimes a fundamental lack of trust in healthcare providers. No one profession specifically, but based on historical research studies and so forth that have been done with people, there is some mistrust. And is this going to be something that one has to be very careful about if it's a law? I don't know what the answer is in terms of why there's all this opposition. The facts tell us that there shouldn't be, but there is. So, David, do you have any other ideas?
What you said is absolutely right, Barbara, but when it comes to religion, there are strong religious objections, particularly from the Catholic religion in New York, which has a lot of influence when it comes to legislation dealing with health care. And that's in part due to the fact that there are some quite good Catholic health care systems that really do a good job in providing good medical care to patients. And over the years, they have had and continue to have a lot of influence with some legislators, maybe a lot of legislators, on health care legislation. And this is one of them. So this is one of their priorities, and they have really come out very staunchly in opposition to the Medical Aid in Dying Act. So have Orthodox Jewish, the Orthodox Jews. So religion plays a role here, and so do disability rights communities, at least some of them. And while the vast majority of people living with disabilities are supportive of the Medical Aid in Dying Act, there are some people in leadership of organizations who have come out in strong opposition and have raised the kinds of concerns that you mentioned, Barbara, about the possibility of coercion and abuse and so forth. And yet, as you also stated, there's been no evidence that there has been any problems whatsoever with coercion or abuse in Oregon or, in fact, in any of the states which have authorized medical aid in dying. So they are only raising speculative concerns, hypothetical, really, which have not been borne out by the facts. And still, there are some legislators who are influenced by their raising these concerns, understandably, until they are hopefully given the facts which show that there have been no problems at all with respect to coercion or abuse with those who have disabilities. And in fact, a few years ago, a former executive director of the Oregon Advocacy and Protection Organization, which represents people with disabilities, said that they had not received one complaint about any kinds of coercion or abuse. And there's never been a successful lawsuit or administrative complaint which has substantiated any problems whatsoever with any of the medical aid in dying legislation. And because of that, I think there are now so many different organizations that maybe once were opposed to medical aid in dying or neutral that are now coming out in support of medical aid in dying.
And I have to say that for the disability community, you know, they have been fighting for rights to live independent lives, rights to make their own choices and decisions. And so this, to me, is just another step in that direction, that it's control over your own life. Who has the right to tell me how to live and how to die? I as an individual who's not disabled significantly, you know, it's important to me. And if I were disabled, I'd want those same rights and freedoms. So let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Cetera in the Catskills. I'm Diana Mason, and I'm talking with David Levin, who is Executive Director Emeritus and Senior Consultant for End of Life Choices New York, and Dr. Barbara Backer, a retired nurse living in Rochester, New York. And we're talking about medical aid in dying. So, David, there
Diana,
are...
Yes. May I interrupt you a minute just to piggyback a little on what you just said? I think we legislators have to realize that people have a fundamental right to self-determination with respect to their bodies and to control the course of their treatment. If you think carefully about what we do in healthcare, we do control a great deal of our treatment. We do make decisions about our lives. We decide when to take a medication, when to see a doctor, when to have a procedure or not to have a procedure, when to obtain a second opinion. If we go down the line to more serious illnesses, we make decisions about whether we should have a, or our loved ones need to have a feeding tube, a ventilator, for how long. All of these affect whether we're going to live or die, either quickly or eventually. So we actually do make determinations for our health care all along the way. It's just that this is another option in the act of dying that we are going to make an informed decision. So I think it's important that people realize this is not a brand new idea in terms of decisions in deciding what's going to happen to our own bodies. We've been doing that, or hopefully most people have been, and to control the course of our medical treatment. Some people want to talk a great deal and take part of it. Others don't, and that's okay. I mean, the whole thing to this bill is the whole idea of an option for choice. I think those two are key words. It's an option and it's a choice, and it's not mandated. And I think that's really important to drive home.
And of course, our right to self-determination over and control of our own bodies has been certainly dealt a blow within the last couple of years since the Dobbs decision and the overturning of Roe v. Wade. One hopes
but not
that
in New York, of course.
Not in New York. That's right. Not in New York. And so it is so curious to me that New York is continuing to drag its feet on this. Now, you noted that Oregon did this 25 years ago, and we said that there are now 10 states and the District of Columbia that have this law in place. So the question I would pose is, we are, I assume, learning a lot from their experience and what is in those laws and what protections and safeguards are in those laws. What is in the New York State bill? David?
Well, I think in our bill we have probably it's the best bill in the country because we've learned from other states. And so there are so many safeguards and protections which really don't apply to other ways, again, which people may accelerate their deaths. And remember that people who die by medical aid in dying need to self-administer the drugs. Nobody can make this decision for them. Nobody can give them the medications and make them take the medication. This has to be done by the individual, him or herself. And I mentioned that, of course, two physicians must confirm that the person is terminally ill with a prognosis of 6 months or less. The terminally ill person, of course, can withdraw the request at any time. And about one-third of those who actually obtain the medication never end up taking the medication, which shows you that this is really a thoughtful process. And for those people, it may be that they're just being comforted by knowing that they have the right to this option, and they have the drugs available, but their suffering doesn't become that unbearable that they feel that they need to take the drugs, and so they live out their lives without having done so, hopefully in hospice. And in fact, about 90% of those people who die by medical aid in dying are receiving hospice care at the end of their lives. Mm-hmm. So as good a job as hospice does, as we mentioned before, it's really not sufficient for all patients. So we have. There's also a mandatory mental health evaluation that's in our bill. If either physician has concerns about the person's mental capacity to make their own healthcare decisions, and the person must make an oral and a written request, and the written request must have two witnesses, neither of whom can be a relative or someone who stands to benefit from the person's estate or a healthcare agent. I mean, there are all kinds of qualifying conditions for this person to be able to obtain and then take these drugs. Health insurance benefits cannot be affected in any way. No physician or healthcare provider needs to participate in medical aid in dying, and anyone attempting to coerce a patient to do this will face criminal prosecution. In addition, we think our law is more progressive and better because, like some states, we don't have a waiting period. Some states have waiting periods of 15 days or at least 72 hours. There are some people who are not going to make this decision until they're close to death. And why should someone have to wait for once it's been determined that they are decisionally capable and terminally ill with a likelihood of dying very soon? Why shouldn't they be able to obtain the medications and take them as soon as they decide that
they want to do so. We also don't have, like some states have, although some states are now abandoning these, residency requirements. Mm-hmm. So if someone wants to come from another state that does not authorize medical aid in dying to New York, and once we have our law available, they will be able to do so. Of course, right now, some people in New York, unfortunately, have to go, if they're able to do so, and it's hard for many terminally ill people to do so, to go to New Jersey and Vermont, our neighboring mm-hmm. states, which do authorize medical aid in dying. And in those states, the laws, again, have worked as intended, just like in every other state. Vermont has had a law since 2012, and New Jersey since 2019. There really haven't been any problems that have emerged as expected by opponents. And so it's really very difficult to understand why there continues to be some of the opposition that there is. And it's just unfortunate that the Catholic, New York State Catholic Conference has such a strong influence on the views of at least some legislators, as well as some people in the disability rights community.
And it seems to me that if I'm not a Catholic, I shouldn't be bound by Catholic rules. So I should have the freedom of choice. That's my opinion. Now,
conversely, though, Diana, is that people, it's a choice that you can make not to for religious reasons. There's no reason why you should take these medications if you're not interested or believe that you shouldn't for religious or other reasons at all.
So I want to raise an issue around this self-administration. One of the illnesses that I think is quite horrific is Lou Gehrig's disease, or ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, where you become essentially paralyzed. So if that's happening to me, and I get to the point, and for, you know, for people who don't know about this, if you've ever cared for somebody with ALS, and we don't all have the resources that Stephen Hawking had, but for those who have this illness, you know, you often die of pneumonia because you can't swallow your secretions and manage your secretions, and as well as other problems. You can't turn, you can still feel, but you can't turn yourself. You have trouble eating, et cetera. And so if I am full-blown ALS, why can't I still participate, even though I can't put the pills in my hand and take them myself?
Well, if you can still swallow, you're going to be able to still take the medications because they're always mixed in a liquid. And so if you can swallow through a straw, you'll still be able to participate. And in fact, the highest percentage of any disease of people who use medical aid in dying is by people with ALS.
Wow.
So there may be some people who are going to be, unfortunately, the window's going to close on them too quickly so that they won't be able to use medical aid in dying. Many others will be able to. And of course, too, if it's not quite clear that you're terminally ill yet, when you're really losing the capacity to do much, if anything, for yourself physically, you could begin the process of voluntarily stopping eating and drinking, at which point you've now become terminally ill. And then instead of having to go through that process, which usually works pretty well for most people, but takes 10 to 14 days on average, you might then be eligible for medical aid in dying.
Let me remind listeners that you're listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, as well as on the campus of SUNY Delhi at 107.5 FM, and of course, everywhere at WIOXradio.org, WIOXradio.org, where you can also make a donation to support this independent community radio station. I'm talking with David Levin, who is the Executive Director Emeritus and Senior Consultant for End of Life Choices New York, and Barbara Backer, a retired nurse living in Rochester, New York. So
yes,
let's...
Diana,
yes, go ahead,
can
Barbara.
Can I just say something yes. here in terms of listening to this, listening to our talking about the safeguards and what someone has to do in order to be able to take the medication. People who are very sick and in pain don't really have the energy, the wherewithal to do all of the things we're saying. It's an energy that you have to gather together just to breathe at the moment. So I'm would like to emphasize that this is a all of the end of life options are a planning thing with the patient or person and the family. And one of the things I think that differentiates end of life options in medical aid and dying is that it is done in conjunction with the family and with the caregivers currently in place. And then it becomes a conversation before we reach the point where someone has to make all these decisions. What if, what that, what do I want, when? It's very difficult when you're in tremendous pain or having difficulty breathing or can't move to come to grips with this at that time. So I'd just like to emphasize the idea of involvement of the family at a much earlier time as we approach dying or think of that coming up soon. It makes it, I'm not saying it makes it easier, but it makes it perhaps more comfortable. And the thing about with medical aid in dying is that the person has been diagnosed allegedly 6 months or less to live. The person, if the person has the medication, the dying event becomes on that person's timetable, not on anybody else's. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another important thing to discuss with loved ones, that this is a schedule based on the person's needs and choices, not anybody else's, because family quite often doesn't want to let go.
Yeah.
And will say, oh, mom, oh, dear, not time yet. Can't you just wait another week? This kind of thing. It's those kinds of decisions are so difficult to make in the throes of the experience of dying. And so I think one of the things to emphasize about this bill is that it is a compassionate one. It recognizes the needs of the patient in the process and the needs of the family in the process. And really about some love there, of sharing that and the compassion that we have for one another. If there's no family, there may be a caregiver, a neighbor, whatever, that can be involved in this. But that's really part of the process. It's very difficult to do this alone or even when you're very, very sick. So that's just a plus for the bill.
Well,
in terms of what we've been discussing.
And you started off, Barbara, by talking about our culture. And the culture in our country is one that we don't talk about death. And it's been really a tough slog to get people to have conversations to just complete an advance directive. An advance directive where you're designating somebody as your healthcare proxy. They know your wishes. And so if something happens to you, they feel like they know what decisions you would want. And I can't begin to emphasize how important this is. And I've said here on the air that my husband and I had these conversations about both of us. He knew what I wanted and didn't want. I knew what he wanted and didn't want. So when he had a massive stroke, I knew what he wanted. I knew what decisions I needed to make. And that was comforting to know that. It was comforting to know that he would not want to have dragged this out. He did not want to have happen to him what happened to his mother and his grandmother, where they lingered for months in semi-consciousness or in terribly, terribly difficult, challenging situations. And so I was able to move him off of aggressive treatment to comfort care, to that palliative care and hospice care, and feel like this is absolutely the right thing to do. So it is those conversations all the way along. And what you're saying, from what I'm hearing, is that this could be part of that conversation. Are you even open to medical aid and dying. And if not, that's fine. If you are, you still, the person who's affected, the person who is dying, that is the person who makes the decision. Even though I've had this conversation, let's say, with my husband, and let's say if he didn't have capacity, I could not have moved forward with medical aid in dying. So these are, I think this idea of the conversations about how we die are so important and goes beyond the medical aid in dying, Bill.
Well, it does. It's, as I said before, it's part of a continuum
yes.
of the options that are available, I think. That's the how to consider it. It's not either or. It can be a combination. As David pointed out, most of the patients are on hospice, and that's sufficient. But it's another option. And I'd just like to read a quote, if I may. When I knew I would be talking today, this is from the Anglican Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu. He was the South African Nobel laureate. When he was speaking in support of a proposed medical aid in dying law in the United Kingdom, he said, "People who are terminally ill should have the option of dignified and compassionate assisted dying. I hope that when the time comes, I hope I am treated with compassion and allowed on to pass on to the next phase of life's journey in the matter of my choice."
Yeah.
So I think he sums it up pretty well in terms of but you mentioned too the whole end of life option planning of starting out with sitting down with the family and talking about, hey, what's going to happen down the line here, and there's a lot of resistance to that, to people doing that. So it has to be, and it doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen in the emergency room. Unfortunately, it does happen in the emergency room, and then people are under such stress to make these life-saving or not life-saving decisions. So, and I see medical aid in dying just well, hopefully as a law in New York, which we can use and present to ourselves and each other as an option, and that we can have a death which is dignified and peaceful rather than bells ringing, sirens going off, as has happened so often in emergency situations. And it's a subtle miracle to have that happen, I think, in end of life. It really is.
So, David Levin, let's talk about where this bill is at in the legislature. It's tell us its status.
Well, right now, it's the bill is in the both the Senate and the Assembly Health Committees. The lead sponsor in the Assembly is Assembly Member Amy Pollan, who happens to be my Assembly person, and she is a very staunch supporter of the bill, and it's a high priority for her. And the lead sponsor in the Senate is Senator Hoylman Siegel, who this is also a priority for. So both of them really want to get this bill out of committee. It might happen soon after the budget is passed. We think the votes are there in the Senate. It's pretty close in the Assembly. There are some legislators who were not clear about it, to whether or not they support the bill. It does appear that the leadership of the Assembly, Carl Hastie, the Speaker of the Assembly, and the leader of the Senate, Andrew Stewart Cousins, are ready to put this bill on the agenda for a vote if the votes appear to be there. We are very close, possibly within a couple of votes for the whole legislature to get this bill done this year. In the meantime, what could be influencing some legislators is the fact that there are just recently new organizations that have come out in support of medical aid in dying. I mentioned earlier that a number of organizations that had been opponents or neutral have now become supporters or changed from opposition to neutral. And this just happened this year with the New York State Bar Association earlier this year, which came out in support of the Medical Aid in Dying Act after not having a position on the bill. And just in the last week or so, the Medical Society of the State of New York has come out in favor of the Medical Aid in Dying Act after being an opponent of the bill 7 years ago when it issued its last statement. So these are powerful influences, both in the legal and healthcare fields, which should have some impact, at least on some legislators, and really may make the difference. But aside from those organizations, there are so many organizations which actually support the medical aid in dying. And I'll just mention a few. I have a list here. I'm going to read them by alphabetical order. Harlem United, Hispanic Health Network, Latinos for Healthcare Equity, League of Women Voters of New York State, the New York Civil Liberties Union, the New York State Academy of Family Physicians. And I should mention that when a survey was done of physicians across New York State in 2018, by a margin of 67% to 19%, there was support for the Medical Aid in Dying Act, much more than a 3-to-1 margin of doctors supported the bill. The Statewide Senior Action Council supports the bill, going back to New York State Public Health Association. There are hardly any organizations which are opposed to the Medical Aid in Dying Act, except for those that are religiously affiliated and some medical organizations, but also they have a religious affiliation, such as Calvary Hospital. So there's overwhelming support amongst the public, amongst the leading medical organization and the leading legal organization in the state of New York, and hopefully they are going to have a lot of influence as we come to the closing weeks of the legislative session. The legislature is supposed to adjourn in early June, and they're going to be passing the budget bill first, of course, in the next several days or week, and then they'll get down to working on other pieces of legislation which they have not yet passed.
And what do we know about the governor's position?
Well, just recently I heard that a lobbyist for working on the bill was in a meeting with the governor. They were talking about some other issue, and she asked the governor, what do you think about medical aid in dying? And the governor expressed a view, I think, something like, send me the bill, which generally means I'll sign it.
So for people who are listening, I want to get to how people can get more information about the bill. But before I do, Barbara, I know that you've been going around asking people. You've been on a listening tour and asking people what are their thoughts. What kind of responses are you getting?
Well, it's interesting, and it's up and down the age group line. I recently talked with several young people in their 30s who are from Oregon who've grown up with this, and they were just shocked that New York didn't have it. To them, it's a part of living in Oregon, and there's a physician support out there, and people just know about it and use it, and it's, you know, just a part of their lives, and they support it. I think with listening to people here in New York, New York State, New York City, other places, question immediately comes up, and David spoke to this earlier, oh, this is suicide. That seems to be ingrained in some people thinking that it is suicide. There's a lot of discussion that has to happen about it not being suicide, as being entirely different. Other people are supportive of it. Some older folks say, I've had a couple friends who just stopped eating and drinking. That was the only option they had. So I get a sense that there's general support of it across the age group. I think people have read or heard enough about horrific stories of people who are dying and can't get this help, people who have been on hospice, who've had palliative care, people getting 4,000 milligrams of morphine and that's not touching them. Personally, a friend of mine was dying, and he was on hospice at home, he just screamed for a day, and there was, we kept giving him morphine. There was nothing that would reach him, and so it's hard to, you know, hard not to support it from my standpoint of view. But I think I don't have a scientific poll on that.
Mm-hmm. That's all right.
I think, yeah, but I think the stories that people have told about having to go through this. This agony of dying and then dying and not having it are reaching some people also. And people most likely have had in their own personal experiences a loved one, a friend, who have had some difficulty with end-of-life dying options.
And I've just always been sort of dumbfounded by the fact that we do not want the animals that we love to suffer. We would shoot a horse if it goes lame, just goes lame. We would don't want our dogs or our cats to suffer, so we might euthanize them. And with, as you said, surrounded by our love. And so it's very curious to me that we are so resistant to having this be a choice that we would have for ourselves and that we would have, that our loved ones would have. So, David, for people who would like more information about this issue and about the bill itself, where can they find it?
Well, there are a couple of things. One, they can go to our website, which is endoflifechoicesny.org, and they can learn about the bill that way. And they can also learn about it by going to the website of a sister organization, Compassion and choices.org. And the bill numbers for the Medical Aid in Dying Act are A995-B. That's A995-B or S for Senate 2445. S2445. But the other thing that's really important for your listeners to do if they are supportive of the bill, because your legislators, Assemblymember Tagg and Senator Oberacker, have not officially announced their positions on the bill. People should be contacting their offices if they are supportive and telling the staff person that they speak with that they want this bill to be passed. And many people have a story about a loved one who really did not die well and might have died much better if they had had the option of medical aid in dying, even though very, very few people actually access this option. It's about 4 in 1,000, contrary to what was thought would happen by people who are opponents of the bill. We thought that some people would think there was a duty to die. There's just been obviously no evidence of that happening whatsoever.
And Barbara Backer, retired nurse living in Rochester, any last words that you'd like to share with listeners?
Yes, I would like to say simply or technically or whatever you want to say, this is a bill that can benefit everyone. It's not a partisan bill. It's a choice. It's an option. It's open to anybody. You don't have to have it. You don't have to take it. It's just another option in your whole healthcare treatment plan, and also just in terms of resources, generally your major hospitals will have a social worker or department that will deal with some of these issues, mostly called healthcare issues, end-of-life options. If the bill becomes a law, it will be under that, but there are people there who can advise you also. I know here in Rochester we have that from the two Rochester General Hospital and University of Rochester Strong Memorial. So those are other avenues. And also the good old Dr. Google has some resources on it too, internet sources as to how you can find people in your area. That might be helpful.
Thank you, and thank you so much for your advocacy, longtime advocacy on this, Barbara Backer. Thank you. And David Levin, final thoughts?
I think the major thing that I would say is that on the bill itself and the legislation that's been enacted in 10 states and the District of Columbia, there's been no showing of any harm being caused to anybody, and that families and patients really benefit by what is now, I think, demonstrably a medical practice which is safe and ethical. And there is just no good reason why there should be any opposition to this bill, even from those from the religious right, which unfortunately continues to oppose it, even though nobody has to use it if they don't want to.
David Levin, Executive Director Emeritus and Senior Consultant at End of Life Choices New York, and Barbara Backer, retired nurse living in Rochester, New York. Thank you so much for coming back on to Health Center in the Catskills and talking about this important issue. And I'm hoping the bill will be passed. And when it is passed and signed by the governor, I want you to come back on and say, now what do we do? What are the next steps? So thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, really important stuff. So my gratitude for both of them for their advocacy. So, and I will report back when I hear from TEG's office or Oberacker's office and let you know what they say. I'm Diana Mason. You've been listening to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains. Have a great day.